Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Kaveh Movahed. Did you hear the announcement last month that the median home price in Santa Fe set a record by breaking $560,000? Maybe it's not surprising that Santa Fe would be a pricey place to live. That's nothing new. But those skyrocketing home prices are also finding their way to Albuquerque. There are attractive reasons to buy a home right now. Low interest rates, the ease of moving for people working remotely, or even as an investment. But those are also some of the factors driving up demand and prices and pushing affordable housing out of reach for a lot of people. Today, we'll talk to a realtor about the state of the housing market in Albuquerque, and we'll hear from longtime affordable housing advocates about our greatest housing needs and some solutions that could help in Albuquerque and up in Santa Fe. And finally, we'll talk about what we can do to ensure safe and affordable homes for our most vulnerable populations. We want to hear from you also. Are you worried that you might get priced out of your hometown or neighborhood? Maybe you think redevelopment is nice, but also taking away the flavor of New Mexico. What do you think the government's role is in ensuring locals have access to affordable homes? You can email us at letstalk@kunm.org or call in live at 277-5866. My first guest this morning, the president of the Greater Albuquerque Association of Realtors, it's Belinda Franco. Good morning, Belinda. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, good morning.
First, let's go ahead and dig into the local landscape of housing by describing the state of the real estate market around Albuquerque right now. What's it like out there?
Oh, goodness. Great question. It really is a little bit of a frenzy. We have low inventory, and we're feeling that across the country, just not New Mexico. But it really is a seller's market, which means that sellers are pretty much getting what they're asking for. If a house is priced correctly, they're going to get multiple showings right out the gates. They're going to get multiple offers. They're going to really be kind of able to be in charge of how that offer is going to go. A lot of times, they're not even willing to do any sort of repairs. They're telling buyers, okay, you come in, you give us your top dollar, and you take the house as is, and we'll call it a day. So it's a little tough for the buyers, and sellers are really getting what they're wanting right now.
And it seems like the old model of making an offer and then negotiating is kind of out the window right now.
Right. Negotiation is really, you bring your highest and best from the get-go, and you're going to be competing immediately with other buyers. And that's really how we're going in as realtors, educating these buyers, saying, if you see a house that hits the market, you need to rearrange your schedule. We need to get into, have you see this home? If you want to make an offer, you need to come strong.
Well, okay, what does it take to buy a home in this market? Are big down payments a necessity to be competitive?
You know, not necessarily. There's a lot of strategic ways of structuring an offer. The most important piece is be pre-qualified. Get your loan in order before you even go look at properties, because once you make that offer, you're going to need to get that ball rolling. And the pre-qualification is most important. So connect with your favorite lender. If you don't have a favorite lender, connect with a realtor that can connect you to a lender that is local and somebody that they like, know, and trust. And I think that that's the most important piece. I always say that's your best first step, is to get pre-qualified so you can come in strong with that offer. And it isn't always about the biggest down payment. It really is about what kind of contingencies are you going to come in with extra cash as a time off market fee that goes directly to the seller? Are you going to come in with some extra earnest money? Are you going to give a shorter escrow period so you can close quickly? There's a lot of different pieces that can help you be a stronger offer. It doesn't always mean more money. Sometimes it's, you know, the best conditions.
Okay, well, who's buying homes right now? Is it a different set of clients than you saw a year or two ago?
You know, we're seeing a lot of investors, and I think a piece of that is we're seeing a lot of people come in from out of state, and so they're selling these high-end or high-dollar homes in other areas of the country. So what they can get in New Mexico for $300,000, $400,000 would be $1 million in another part of the country. So we're seeing people come in with cash wanting to buy investment properties, because I think they're seeing that our market is such that they want to jump on those properties because it's such low inventory. And cash typically will win out over a loan, not always, but you know, cash is definitely a strong component. So we're seeing a lot of investment properties. We're seeing a lot of out-of-state people. You know, Intel just announced that their new chip, and so that's going to increase some jobs and the people coming into the area. And so there's always going to be that need to buy and sell. There's always going to be the people coming in for new jobs, and that's just one piece of the puzzle.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of the factors that are limiting the number of homes listed for sale right now. We heard this morning on Morning Edition about the skyrocketing price of lumber because of beetles and trade issues with Canada, and that's likely not going to ease up for a year or two. What else is keeping home inventory low?
You know, I think that that's a big piece is that new construction that... Because we haven't had a lot of new construction, there's not a lot of resale in the residential market. And I think that that has been the challenge across the board. And like you said, I don't think it's going to change really for the next year or 2 years. There are a lot of challenges with, you know, land prices. The land prices are at a premium, and builders are struggling with lumber and other materials like plumbing fixtures and doors and windows. So it's not just lumber, although lumber, you know, you hear about that a lot in the news. It's all the pieces to build that home.
I'm wondering, does the pandemic play any role in the kind of low inventory?
You know, I think that that does play a piece. I think that a lot of people have found that they are now working from home, but that also means that they're possibly looking to upgrade their home, or they're realizing that they need a home office or a home gym, or they're wanting a bigger yard, or they're wanting to live multi-generationally. And so they're wanting a bigger home to accommodate more people. So we're seeing the challenge is there's a lot of components to it, but I think that COVID has, the people that have needed to move and for different reasons, whether it's a job or whatnot, they're finding ways to do that. But the people that don't necessarily have to sell are typically not choosing to put their house on the market because they don't want people in and out of their home for COVID reasons. So we're seeing both sides. Either they really want to move because of COVID or they're staying put because of COVID. So there's not a clear-cut answer for you.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you maybe the toughest question. When it comes to affordability, when do you think we might see a transition to a more affordable buyer's market?
Yeah, I wish that I had a crystal ball to be able to really give you a great answer on that. We have been listening to economists from across the country. The National Association of Realtors has a great chief economist. His name is Dr. Lawrence Yoon. He has stayed very optimistic over this past year. He doesn't feel that there's going to be really a change in the next, you know, from 2021 to 2022, we'll probably stay about the same. Our interest rates are still low. You can still get a 30-year fixed loan for, you know, 3% to 3.25%. 15-year rates are even lower than that. FHA and VA loans are in the twos right now. And so I don't know if we're going to see a huge change in the next couple years. You know, we've talked a little bit about how interest rates and the housing market is kind of cyclical. We definitely don't hear from these economists from across the country that we're in a housing bubble. It really is more of the supply and demand. And I think that that's really, you know, that's the low inventory piece.
Okay, so no quick solutions coming. I'm going to ask that if you can't hang on the phone line, maybe we'll get some callers who have questions about the home buying process or what's going on in real estate in Albuquerque. But I would like to introduce our next guest. It's Daniel Werwath. He's the executive director of New Mexico Interfaith Housing and acting director of the Housing Trust in Santa Fe. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Daniel.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we just heard about some of the new economic challenges for homebuyers in Albuquerque, but in Santa Fe, home prices have been high for some time. What's going on with real estate prices up there in Santa Fe?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Santa Fe has always had a reputation as being a more expensive market, one of the, if not the most expensive markets in New Mexico, and that remains true. I think what we're seeing locally is sort of unprecedented levels of housing costs, both for rental and home ownership. when we look at the year-on-year data from the fourth quarter of 2020, the city of Santa Fe saw almost a 30% increase in median home sales price. So if you can imagine the idea that, you know, the opportunity to buy a house went up in cost by a third when, you know, for most folks during the pandemic, incomes have been flat, down, or disappeared. So it's really challenging. And then on top of that, we've had for years a shortage of rental housing that dates back to about 2014. And so even prior to the pandemic, the vast majority of working class renters in Santa Fe were paying unaffordable rents before the pandemic. And that affects the whole market. When you don't have an affordable rental, you're never going to save a down payment to buy a house. And so, you know, our whole housing ecosystem is pretty unhealthy at this point.
Okay, I guess just so we understand, what would be affordable for the average Santa Fan?
Well, it really depends how you measure that, right? Like, housing affordability is measured as a factor of an individual person's income. And in affordability programs, we look at indicators that are called HUD area median incomes. Those incomes actually went down this year from last year. But the median income in Santa Fe for a family of four is about, you know, it's in the mid 70,000. And, you know, the way we measure affordability is you know, a measure of a person's gross monthly wages and that their housing costs not exceed 30% of those wages. So it's sort of a sliding scale. And what we have in Santa Fe is an issue where sort of underlying supply and demand economics, which your last guest really brought up the issue importantly, I think, is that, you know, when our underlying supply and demand economics are so unhealthy, you start to see housing affordability issues creep up in income. And I would say based on our current market, folks up to probably 140-150% of the median income don't have access to market rate home ownership in our community. So it's well over half the population has no viable opportunity to home ownership currently.
I'd like to read an email we got from Kelly. She's needing to move homes at the end of this month. She's been searching for an affordable rental for herself, her daughter, and her dog for 2 months already, and she's experiencing what she calls insanity. Not only are rentals going up $1,000 or more, but they're impossible to find. And for the past month and a half, she's been putting in applications at $40 to $50 each. That's typically non-refundable. And then she doesn't hear back from the rental companies or, you know, another applicant gets the homes. And she says, 2 years ago, when I was looking, I was able to find a place in one day.
Yeah. So one of the things we've got to understand is the thing that we're feeling right now is the culmination of years of neglect around our housing market. And, you know, like I said, we've crossed a threshold in 2014 that indicated that our rental market was moving into a supply constrained scenario. And now with, you know, the pandemic, with a lot of folks looking to relocate to Santa Fe, long-standing patterns, retirees, folks that work from anywhere, moving to places for quality of life. The pandemic has heightened those existing patterns. And then you add in the fact that, you know, we just basically haven't produced enough housing since the last economic downturn to keep up with population growth. And what we're really feeling now is sort of the acute effects of the pandemic on an underlying structural problem. And one of the biggest problems you have when you don't have enough housing supply is that landlords can get away with being pretty terrible. When you have lots of options in the market, landlords have to cater to the renter, not the other way around. When their supply is scarce, they can treat people however they want. And we're seeing that across the board. And that's one of the reasons local advocates here in Santa Fe have been pushing for the idea of some basic rental standards, which our city doesn't even have.
All right. Thank you. We have to go to a quick break. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Kaveh Movahed. We're taking your calls about affordable housing. Is it a right or a privilege? Tell us what you think by calling in at 277-5866. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Basement Films, celebrating its 16th anniversary. Experiments in Cinema International Film Festival with artist films from around the world. Online May 1st through 22nd. Details at experimentsincinema.org.
Support comes from Canteen Brewhouse. Locally brewed beer, growlers, crowlers, six packs, and root beer are available. Dine in and carry out Monday through Thursday, 2 to 8, Friday and Saturday, noon to 9, and Sunday, noon to 8, available. CanteenBrewhouse.com.
It's one of the most harrowing and emotionally moving and relevant pieces of 21st century music. Seven Last Words of the Unarmed by Joelle Thompson. I'm Fred Child. Join me to share the experience and the music on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Kaveh Movahed, and on the line with us is Daniel Werwath, the Executive Director of New Mexico Interfaith Housing and Acting Director of the Housing Trust. Daniel, affordable housing is a complex problem. You told me that if there were only one or two issues, we would have already addressed them. Can you describe some of the internal and external forces that are working against affordable housing in Santa Fe?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think the biggest one, and this isn't a unique problem in the Mountain West, is sort of a desire to maintain quality of life and the things that make a community, desirable. At the same time, we plan for growth and the needs around housing affordability and climate change and other things. So I think, you know, the biggest problem that we have to fix right now is sort of what I would characterize as existing in a state of late-stage suburban capitalism, and that our orientation around suburban single-family housing development, our zoning is deeply unprepared to deal with, you know, the kind of housing densities we need to create affordability. I think that's a really good, important point we need to draw out here, is that costs are going up. They're unprecedented in terms of what it costs to build a housing unit now. And it is in every sector, from land to construction costs to lumber to professional trades to insurance. Literally everything is at a cost that's higher than ever. And these are structural problems, right? These aren't things that are going to ease. We don't have enough land zoned correctly to build the housing we need to build. We don't have the supplies of lumber. Things like lumber, too, people don't realize climate-driven natural disasters are making the demand for materials more and more challenging. The project that I'm building right now, an affordable rental complex in Santa Fe, we actually bought all of our transformers ahead of hurricane season, because oftentimes during and after hurricane season now you can't buy transformers. So there's issues like that. There's issues around, you know, creating adequate public subsidy, that idea that housing is a right. The federal government does not treat it that way and does not fund it that way. So local governments need to come up with ways to help their most economically vulnerable residents. And then at the same time, we need to figure out how to create healthy enough supply and demand real estate markets that we aren't making housing affordability a bigger problem to solve than it should be. And that's the problem in Santa Fe right now, right? We have an unforced error around housing supply, and a lot of it's related to land use. A lot of it's related to political processes. I would lay a lot of the blame in, the basically elected bodies and planning commissions that deny projects, downzone projects, have failed to anticipate the land use context we need to deal with the housing problems we have. But in the context where, like, housing development is more expensive than ever, land is more expensive than ever, the only way to really achieve affordability in this context is to create denser housing. And so that means looking at a lot of missing middle housing types, things like 2-, 3-, 4-plex rentals, attached home ownership options, and then ultimately, more and more multifamily rental as not just a solution to the affordability problems, but also something that's moving us closer to environmental sustainability and a response to climate change in the built environment, where we need denser housing to support transportation. We need denser housing to support neighborhood amenities so people don't need to drive. And then, of course, denser housing is just naturally more energy and water efficient because it shares walls, it has less yard. A third of our water in Santa Fe goes into the ground for landscaping or trees. And as water is a huge issue, we need to start talking about how different housing types impact water.
Now, There's so much hope for the Midtown campus that's mostly vacant and used to house the College of Santa Fe. There was more reporting on it this morning, I think, in the Albuquerque Journal. It's 64 acres in the heart of town, and it's been a, you know, there's been a long discussion of it as a site for affordable housing, and the city's back to managing it now. Could that be a boon for affordable housing? And then what are problems with that project and maybe even that way of thinking?
It's an opportunity. I don't think it's like a golden goose in the sense that the city owes a lot of money on that asset. And it's an institutional site. And so integrating housing means a large-scale redevelopment of the property. I think that, you know, the real opportunity lies in programming it and how we plan from a zoning perspective, from a master planning perspective, how we approach the site. That's the real opportunity. For it to be an opportunity to create affordability, we need to basically figure out how to essentially donate that land into an affordable housing development project. And, you know, that would take the city being willing to take on debt or figure out other ways to pay off the debt that relates back to the land, because it's not particularly affordable land from just a top level perspective. And then the bigger issues, I mean, I think really the challenge Santa Fe faces is, you know, Santa Fe is very attached to its historic identity. It's very attached to its identity as a small town. It is pushing 100,000 people now. And I think one of the biggest challenges we need to do is grow up our approach to some of these things and look at new financing tools, maybe even look at things like redevelopment authorities. Santa Fe has a habit of sort of recreating the wheel every time we come on a situation like this. And we'll create a wholly new public input process and a wholly new capacity around redevelopment. Whereas I think we're at the size of a community with enough publicly owned assets that looking at some sort of formal redevelopment authority like Albuquerque has, which wields taxation authority and some other funding sources that could help drive success on the campus. But I think really what it comes down to is it's not going to be successful unless we figure out some mechanisms to invest in that property, not just hope that the fact that we own and have a ton of debt on 65 acres of land can sort of make community outcomes on their own. And that extends to the whole neighborhood. You know, the article about St. Michael's Drive, which is a state highway being turned over to the city, you know, that's an opportunity to leverage from the state improvements to that road. That road is one of the most dangerous for pedestrians in the city of Santa Fe. There's a lot of high density, particularly affordable housing around that road, presents obstacles for those folks who don't have cars to access school, basic services, things like that. So investment in that road, downsizing it, it was sized to be actually a potential route of I-25. So it has an interstate right of way in the heart of the city. And there's a huge opportunity to right size that road, make it a complete street, maybe even give some land back to private landowners to look at redeveloping into housing. Some analysis years ago suggested that well over 1,000 units of housing could be built in the just in the parking lots on St. Michael's Drive. So wow. I think we really need a neighborhood level approach to that problem rather than hoping that some magical redevelopment scenario on the campus will somehow lift up the whole neighborhood.
Okay, I have a question for our listeners. Do you think the government should do more to help with affordable housing? What ideas do you have? Call 277-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org and tell us what you think. Now, yesterday I was able to talk to Elena Gonzalez. She's the Senior Director for Policy and Community Engagement for HomeWise. She told me that in Albuquerque, where she works, the biggest needs are smaller spaces, live workspaces, and what she called alternative creative housing. Those sound like new design styles, maybe not your typical ranch-style home or casita, and it made me think of the Siler Yard project in Santa Fe. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, that's the project that I mentioned earlier. It is a collaboration with the city of Santa Fe and an organization called Creative Santa Fe and a bunch of other partners. It's a 65-unit live-work affordable rental development. We basically implemented a several hundred thousand dollar multi-year community outreach and design process. It is basically designed around the needs of self-employed folks, artists, creative people, really looking at that aspect of the community as being a missing resource, especially in a place where the arts and culture economy is a huge driver. The irony of this project is that it's coming online right now in the middle of the pandemic. And as we saw with the last economic downturn in 2009, it is a lot of folks in the creative industries that are the first hit in Santa Fe during an economic downturn. And then a lot of folks are pushed into self-employment from changes at companies in situations like this. So, yeah, the project's really interesting in the sense that it's going to be the first net zero energy affordable project. We're aiming to offset the energy consumption of the entire project with a utility scale solar array on the roofs of the project. And yeah, it's a long term income restricted affordable housing project. The rents range from at the lowest income level, about $400 a month, all utilities included, for a one bedroom live work unit. And then, at the lowest income level, the three bedroom units are under $600 a month. And then at the highest income level we serve, the range is between about $750 and $1,250, all utilities included. And all of the project is income restricted, varies on family size, but a general guideline is the uppermost income for a single person in that project will be just under $30,000 a year. So really focused on true affordable housing for folks that are earning right around, the living wage here in Santa Fe.
Okay, hang with us if you can. I'd like to go ahead and introduce our next guest. We're grateful to have Michael Barrio, the Executive Director of the Santa Fe Housing Action Coalition, joining us. We've discussed some of the reasons homes are becoming less affordable in Albuquerque and Santa Fe. The Housing Action Coalition is focused on solutions. Thank you for being with us this morning, Michael.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure. First, the coalition has a broad membership with lots of big names from Santa Fe. Can you kind of tell us who's involved?
Yeah, we do. So we are a very broad community coalition. We've got, Meow Wolf, HomeWise, the Housing Trust, the Community Foundation, the public schools, Christus St. Vincent, the Coalition to End Homelessness, St. Elizabeth, the Realtors, Habitat for Humanity. I'm missing a lot of people, home builders, but it's a pretty wide cross-section of stakeholders in our community. And I think that's really what gives us kind of the weight that we have, which is great.
So I read that the goal of the coalition is to create systems-level change for affordable housing policy. What does that look like? How do you do it?
So it's looking at things, encouraging the development of affordable housing and everything that it entails, right? And it's taking a look at zoning code and regulation that might inhibit development. It's engaging in really deep community engagement and a lot of research and data aggregation. Those are kind of the foundational pieces that I think that we're talking about as we're building towards solutions. It's working on things like, I think I mentioned some of those, the zoning reform and, kind of streamlining the development review process for efficiency and things like that. So it's not just the policy pieces, right? It's taking a look at, the foundational structural pieces that help power the development of housing. And then, just working on developing and encouraging leadership to set housing goals that can reach what we're looking to reach in terms of solving our affordable housing crisis.
So when you're kind of using that macro lens, what do you see as the biggest needs in Santa Fe?
I think we have a lot of needs. Obviously one of the first needs that we have is we just don't have enough housing to go around. And that's market rate or, affordable housing. Whatever you're talking about, we just don't have enough. I think that we've got below a 2% vacancy rate in Santa Fe and when it comes to, rentals. And so I would say that's what we really need. And I would tend to focus on multifamily rental housing just because, I'm thinking about the working class folks that really do all the work to support and uphold Santa Fe and its economy. And those are the very people that really can't afford to live in Santa Fe. You know, these people are living in Rio Rancho and driving in. And so I feel like aside from just the fact that we don't have enough housing, that we don't have enough affordable housing, I think a big piece of the work that the coalition does is to ensure that the community has a much better understanding of what the issue is and all of the kind of components that go into that. You know, because in general, the public doesn't have, I don't think, a comprehensive idea or understanding of housing. You know, I think people just generally understand that there's not enough and whatever is around is too expensive. And they're anxious and angry. And a lot of the time those emotions are misdirected. And I feel like the coalition can do a lot to help in that regard.
Okay, we have a caller, Elizabeth from Albuquerque. Elizabeth, jump right in. What do you have to say this morning?
Well, I have a question about the rental market. And I wondered if current regulations or threats of regulations against evictions for landlords is affecting both the price and the availability of rentals.
Okay, I think this might be a better question for Daniel than Michael. Daniel, what do you think?
Hey, yeah, I think it's hard to tell at this point. I mean, obviously, if huge groups of people were evicted overnight, that would create supply availability, which could ease pricing, but it would create so many other problems that, you know, I think it would the net negative effect would be that we would have a lot of potential challenges around rehousing people, around the impacts on healthcare and education and other things that happen when people are displaced from housing. So, you know, obviously, honestly, right now, those moratoria, which was, you know, just struck down in federal court, the CDC moratoria, it's important for people to understand that while the federal eviction ban was struck down, New Mexico still has a state order in place. But the, you know, right now, that is the most important thing that's keeping a lot of folks in housing that were impacted by the pandemic. And what I would prefer to see folks, you know, especially government officials do, is harness resources to help folks get caught back up on their mortgages, or assistance for landlords that forgives back rent. You know, we made the mistake of not acting quick enough with financial assistance in 2009, and we spent a huge amount of energy in the affordable housing sector dealing with foreclosures, like the actual houses, not the families. And I think the lesson from that is we need to act swiftly. But the state has resources for both homeowners and renters behind on their mortgages. You can look at the Mortgage Finance Authority's website for different assistance programs. I think another key point is a lot of local municipalities have used CARES Act funding, local funds, and other funding sources to assist renters and homeowners who are impacted by the pandemic. And so I encourage folks to contact their local housing departments, their county housing departments, to see if there's resources available. I know that, you know, the city of Santa Fe for the first time has, partly from the work of the coalition and Michael, has funded its housing trust fund at $3 million for this coming year, which is probably at least five times more funding than it's ever had. And the number one priorities they've stated for that funding this year is going to be helping existing homeowners who are behind on their mortgages avoid foreclosure and helping renters get caught up with rental assistance. So all that is a long way of saying that, you know, the problems with our rental markets are structural. They're not related to the issues that we have at the moment. And some of those things like eviction bans, you know, they aren't really affecting pricing in the way that the structural problems with the market are really driving them.
Okay, thank you very much. That was Daniel Werwath, Executive Director of the New Mexico Interfaith Housing and also Acting Director of the Housing Trust. We need to take a quick break. I'm Kaveh Movahed. This is Let's Talk New Mexico.
The issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls spans international borders. Canada's government completed a years-long national inquiry. Femicide in Mexico is complicated by migration, language barriers, and lack of resources. We'll get perspectives from across the U.S. borders on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
It's spring cleaning time, the perfect time to clear that old car out of your garage or that old truck out of your driveway. Maybe you've been meaning to get rid of it but haven't gotten around to it. KUNM makes it easy to donate. One call and everything's taken care of. We come and tow it away. You get a tax deduction, a KUNM membership, and it helps us pay for the programs you love. So don't put it off anymore. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We've covered a lot already this morning, and there's still time for you to call with a question. Call 277-5866 and tell us how you're taking advantage of rising home prices. Now, I'd like to add another voice to this discussion. Joining us is Johanna Gilligan. She's the Senior Director for Community Development at HomeWise. Good morning, Johanna.
Good morning.
We've heard a lot about HomeWise working with prospective buyers to improve credit and find financing, but tell us a little bit about the community development mission and how it relates to home affordability.
Absolutely. So for those who don't know, HomeWise is a nonprofit that enables homeownership for people left out of the market by vertically integrating the real estate process. So our CEO, Mike Lofton, likes to talk about how buying a home and being in the real estate process can feel like being in a pinball machine where you go here for your realtor and you go there for your financing, and it's not a cohesive process. So the HomeWise model basically brings a person all the way through the process, but starts with a place that other banks or realtors can't help you, which is by helping improve credit and provide down payment assistance to qualifying borrowers. And then from there, helping people, you know, achieve the dream of homeownership. So like our first guest was saying today, you know, getting started in your homeownership journey at HomeWise is great, because if your credit score is in the pits, we can help you improve that so that you are ready to be pre-qualified for financing, which is obviously critical in this really competitive market. So that's what HomeWise does. And the Community Development Department is a department that looks at neighborhood scale work that blends a combination of revitalization and anti-displacement strategies. So many neighborhoods in Albuquerque, like many neighborhoods across the country, have suffered from, you know, the negative outcome of infrastructure projects or a loss of jobs, a deindustrialization that has led to downturns and increased vacancies and those kind of challenges. So to address those issues, we do both residential and commercial renovation projects, where we buy empty buildings and renovate them and sell them to business owners or rent owners and sell them to homeowners. And that is great and helps to address issues of vacancy and to make sure that the increasing in values doesn't displace people. We also focus on increasing the homeownership rate and the business ownership rate. So we actually now have a commercial mortgage program that we're starting to beta test so that people can benefit from changes in the market that come from revitalization or rent or a kind of renewal process. And it's been great to hear previous guests and Neil talking so much about infrastructure, which is critical, and Mario talking so much about policy, which is critical. And I think what HomeWise brings to the table is really a great focus on the human end of the equation, which is like, how do we prepare people to be ready to become homeowners? Which is another critical factor, I would say, in who gets included in and who gets left out of the opportunity to build wealth and, you know, achieve stability through homeownership.
Okay. Community development then is typically infill projects, and you're talking about, let's also talk about the people. I kind of want to step back to Michael Barrio and ask about, you know, land use keeps coming up in discussions, especially zoning and the lack of infill in cities. How do you win over homeowners associations that always seem to show up to public meetings and rally against development in their areas? And what about politicians that ultimately make the policy? How do you win their support for new projects?
Well, that's a tricky question. It's a tricky process also. I feel like one of the ways to really just kind of address the concerns of homeowners is just to talk to them directly and frankly about what's happening in their neighborhoods. I think that's the best that we can do in terms of, you know, kind of getting an understanding of what the city, what advocates are trying to do. But, you know, there's a part of me that, and I may get some flack for this, but there's a part of me that in some ways just is not concerned with some of the homeowners' opinions. And the reason for that is because a lot of times I feel like we have trouble mapping our wants and our needs, right? Whenever we're talking about homeowners. So there's a lot of talk about people being in favor of affordable housing, except it just never, as long as it's not in their own backyards, or as long as it's, you know, not near their neighborhood where they're, you know, where their property value could potentially go down. So I feel like there's only so far that you can get with homeowners associations in some ways. But you know, I may be wrong. I think that, again, it takes a lot of just engaging and being really open about the work that's being done, and also being able to leverage compromise whenever that's something that makes the most sense. What we never want is for the perfect to be the enemy of the good. And I think that we see that all too often with these kinds of developments and projects. And then I guess when it comes to those that are in leadership, you know, advocacy is really all about leveraging the networks that you're able to build and building on the work that you've done over a number of years, and then just being able to have those same real conversations that are powered by data, research, and community input that make it really difficult for elected leaders to ignore. So all of those things paired with the power of our coalition and all of the members that really have made it a priority to ensure that accessibility and affordability for housing in Santa Fe is a goal that we reach. So I feel like, you know, it's kind of like this recipe where those three ingredients are the necessary elements. Yeah, so I'd say that and a little bit of magic.
Okay, I see we have an email from Joanne, and I think this is right up Johanna's alley. She asks, what's the real potential for converting vacant commercial centers into housing and mixed uses?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunities for creativity when it comes to thinking about how to retool some of the buildings that are essentially becoming useless, right? So I think Meow Wolf is a great example of how to convert, you know, a space like you might find in a mall into some really creative, exciting, you know, space for kids and adults. In terms of housing, I think it's a little bit harder because you know, you want some spaces are built as commercial spaces, and it's really difficult to make them into residential spaces and feel like homes. But there's lots of opportunities right now, I think, with hotel conversions into, you know, SROs or condos. Our real estate development team, which is really focused on adding supply, housing supply to the Santa Fe market, they've built and sold over 150 homes in the last 3 years. They're working on a couple of exciting projects right now that are conversions of former Airbnbs into affordable condos. So we're definitely eager and open to look at any opportunity to take a building and think about how it could be repurposed to meet the current needs, which are clearly housing.
Okay, now I think it is fair to ask this question, important even. Should residents worry that if HomeWise or any developer really comes in and starts renovating the neighborhood, that either the neighborhood will lose its unique character or prices will start to rise with, you know, the increased desirability? You know, gentrification is this process of wealthier people moving into poorer neighborhoods and making capital improvements. But the real fear is that the original residents will be displaced. How do you address that?
Yeah, absolutely. We share that concern, which is why we really pair our redevelopment work with these very specific anti-displacement strategies that include increasing the homeownership rate, helping low-income homeowners who need access to home improvement loans to get 0% interest deferred home improvement loans, meaning you can borrow the money, make the improvements on your home, and then pay back the money when you sell your house. You have no additional payments. So we definitely share these concerns and are constantly thinking about how we can create financial tools, but also how we can approach the processes with which we do the redevelopment in a way that feels you know, really inclusive and participatory. So I'll give you two examples of that. One is that we did a participatory kind of planning process where we did a research project with residents from the neighborhood and surveyed almost 160 residents in the Borealis area. And we're using the results of that survey to inform our new redevelopment and development. So what are the needs and how can we make sure that our commercial uses match those needs? And then another is the way we approached the redevelopment of the Rupee Drugstore, which is an incredible, iconic, and cultural institution in the Borealis neighborhood. So we intentionally kept the main space of that building open for community use for the first year of the reopening of that building because we wanted to make sure people came back into the space and felt a part of that process. So within the first month, we had events put on by residents, by people 27 days out of the month. So I think we're really thinking about how can we kind of unleash the creative potential of the communities in which we work through our redevelopment efforts, because we totally agree that, you know, these things must change. Things are always changing. And how they change, I think, makes the difference between whether or not existing residents feel a part of that change or left out.
Okay, I'd like to introduce our final guest this hour. He's doing very important work to serve some of our most vulnerable populations who need help with housing. Serge Martinez is a professor of law at UNM and one of the directors of Amparo, an organization working to stave off evictions and get families into emergency housing. In this line of work, Professor Martinez has learned a lot about the lower tier of housing in Albuquerque. Thanks for joining us this morning, Professor.
It's a pleasure to be here.
First, can you tell us about the populations you work with?
Sure. Most of the folks that my clinic and I work with and through Amparo are folks who are, you know, at the very lower end of the rental housing market, folks who are living, you know, a financial existence where one little hiccup, a car, having to fix a car or a medical issue or a change in hours can really impair their ability to pay the rent, even the low rents that they're often paying.
Well, you're working with these most vulnerable populations. They're facing overwhelming barriers if it comes to home ownership. Can you tell us about those circumstances? And then how do they fare when it comes to just finding affordable rental housing?
Yeah, I mean, this is a demographic that is often, you know, home ownership is just, it's a pipe dream, at least for the present, right? And as one of the earlier folks mentioned, when you're spending a huge percentage of your income on rent, then saving up for a down payment, qualifying for these programs is very far in the future, if anywhere. So the folks that we work with are, you know, folks who are barely able to, or often, you know, facing eviction from pretty low rental places, right? New Mexico is ahead of the national average on evictions, and Albuquerque is leading the way because of affordability. Folks just can't afford to pay the rents, and that is often a function of their income or disruptions to income, as well as the amount of rent that they're being charged.
Okay, we have a caller, Beth, in Albuquerque. Beth, what would you like to add today?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the conversation. When I initially called in, we hadn't had much discussion about affordable home ownership, but the conversation has moved on to include it. And I just want to advocate for that actually affordable home ownership with programs like HomeWise or Habitat for Humanity really give people who are in the low income HUD brackets to the ability to pass, to acquire equity, to acquire wealth in quotations, and to pass it on to generations. So it's an investment that I think we need to be looking at as a really dollar for dollar good long-term investment in creating more financial equity in our communities.
Great comments, Beth. Thank you. Let's take the next caller too. Margie, go ahead.
Hi. I was looking for houses to buy, and I cut out foreclosures, and 124 houses went away. And that was just Albuquerque. That includes million-dollar homes, includes all price ranges. And it would be nice, but probably not, but it would be nice if the million-dollar home people explained to their neighbors they were getting foreclosed, so that it might be easier to build these housings because they understand it can happen to anybody.
Sure, sure. And I think we've definitely seen in the housing crash, 12 years ago, a lot of people got in over their heads, and that problem hasn't exactly gone away. Professor Martinez, we've been talking about rental properties. I guess just for scale, can you give us an idea of how many people in Albuquerque are renting?
Yeah, so it's, you know, above, in Bernalillo County is the figures that I have. I don't know about Albuquerque proper, but it's about, you know, just a bit over 35% of renters in the last figures that I have. That's about 100,000 households in Bernalillo County. So we're talking about a huge chunk of the population that's renting.
Okay, I've heard, and maybe Johanna can speak to this, but rental properties are often not more affordable than home ownership. I guess I'm just wondering, when we think about those barriers, are they always real barriers, or are they often imagined barriers?
I mean, if Johanna has a quick answer to that, I'd be happy to defer. I've not seen folks who are sort of on the margins here, for home ownership, where they're just trying to make a decision between home ownership or rental. It's just not even an option in
okay.
the populations that I work with.
Johanna, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that, you know, in Borrella specifically, the majority of people are paying between $750 and $1,250 a month in rent. The median home price this year went up significantly to $170,000. And with the kind of down payment assistance we can provide, that would create a monthly mortgage payment of about $1,000 a month. So it is really, you know, even. And I think that there's a long history of excluding people through deed restrictions and redlining that I think we're still dealing with that makes it feel like homeownership is unachievable. But to Beth's point, this is a really critical strategy for addressing the wealth gap, the racial wealth gap. And I bet that all the callers on this line today own their own homes. And we do that because we know it's a great way for us to have stability and build wealth. And so we need all of these solutions. We need the work that Surge is doing with people facing eviction. We need to be pushing for policies that make sure that renters are treating their tenants fairly. And I challenge everyone in the housing sector to always think, when can we be helping people use their rent, their needs to live in a house as a way to build wealth? And homeownership is a great way to do that.
Professor Martinez, we are almost out of time, but how can city governments ensure that there's good, affordable rental housing?
Yeah, so I think, you know, so a lot of the ideas that folks have talked about, and it goes to sort of, you know, this mindset of understanding that housing stability is not just a right, it makes sense, right? We've seen this last year that stable housing is an important element of public health. We know it affects physical health, mental health, it affects community development, right, and the building community wealth. Stability allows folks to create political power in their own neighborhoods and have self-determination and respond to some of these questions we've had about gentrification.
Okay, I'm sorry I have to cut you off. Our time's up today. It went too fast. It always does. Thanks to everyone who called in to share your thoughts, and thanks so much for our guests, Belinda Franco, Daniel Werwath, Michael Barrio, Johanna Gilligan, and Professor Serge Martinez. Affordable housing is a complex topic that can only be solved by addressing the barriers on all sides, like bureaucracy, economics, and neighborhood demands. We'll keep covering housing on KUNM, but please keep sharing your thoughts on Twitter, #LetsTalkNM, on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or email us, letstalk@KUNM.org. If you missed part of the show, we'll have audio up on our website soon, or subscribe to our podcast. You can find it wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Our engineer this morning is Marino Spencer, Taylor Velasquez handled the phones, and Ty Bannerman is our executive producer. I'm Kaveh Movahed. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.